Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that's one. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show underway. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, that's me. The great one, Lonzo, that's he. And we are glad to have you along with us every weekday morning from 6 until 10 a.m. as we bring you the most off-the-rails and electrifying sports talk radio show in all of entertainment. We're talking some college football in this hour of the show. You know, I have heard a few times that the narrative about Dabo needing to embrace NIL and the portal and yada, yada, yada is it's tired, Rob. It's not the real issue here, Rob. And I honestly don't have a problem with that, but I'm also going to say that if you won't listen to me when I say it, perhaps, perchance, per maybe, maybe you'll listen when Nick Saban has something to say. And we're going to get to that here in just a few minutes. I would also like to get to some commentary that was made yesterday because old Dabo did his radio show last night. And there were a couple of quotes in it that I found, we'll say, for me, maybe not for Clemson fans, somewhat entertaining.
Is he still not taking calls?
He is still not taking calls. That is correct. Right. Still not taking calls. Tyler from Spartanburg did a number. Tyler from Spartanburg changed Dabo's radio show, and he has not gone back to the old format since.
I wonder if that call screener is still in radio.
That's a very good question. What is it the same call screener, or have they moved on? But we'll talk a little bit about a couple of the comments that Dabo said yesterday, including one that is going to, I think, I'm going to cause a mild bit of controversy and uncomfortability.
Not you. You wouldn't do that.
Not on purpose.
Okay. All right.
Not on purpose. But I heard two or three things yesterday that I was like, nah, don't love that. Don't love that, Dabo. I mean, I get it, but I don't love it. So we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on in the radio show. We have got, obviously, we mentioned the SEC scheduling news in the last segment of the show. If you missed it, the South Carolina Gamecocks have had their three annual rivalries. Actually, you know what? This is dumb. That's a thing we're about to talk about. We're about to talk about it because it is 7:03 in the morning. You have less than 57 minutes until you've got to be to the office. It is Tuesday, which means that you have 2 days to kill until we get to Thursday night college and NFL football. Then you've got another day and a half to kill before we get to Saturday, and we run it back in the landscape of college football. I know what's going on. You're just trying to kill time. You're just trying to get there. You're just trying to make it to football weekend one more time again. Will allow us to help. The best way to kill time, easy. The best way to kill time is by talking sports at the office with your boss or your manager, your supervisor, your coworkers, whoever you're obligated to spend time with. At least you can talk some sports. Talking sports is a great way to kill time until we get to the next round of sports. So let's help you do that. That's why we, every morning, do this. In fairness, he's not wrong.
Well, no, he's absolutely right. Yeah. To win games, you got to not lose the game.
You know what? I don't think we ever actually got to that clip, did we?
You did not. No, you
I think we did. I think I teased it. I think I got to it. because you guys started blowing up my text line that day with football stuff. We might circle back around to that. We'll see how the show goes. I got a lot of stuff to get to.
That's still football stuff.
It is football stuff. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But in the meantime, football stuff. Item number one. News and notes out of the National Football League. We start with, of course, last night's contest. Monday night football. The Detroit Lions moved to 2-1. They dropped the Baltimore Ravens to 1-2 with a 38-30 victory on MNF. Jared Goff, 202 yards on 20 of 28 through the air, threw for a touchdown, but it was the ground game. The definition of ground and pound for the Detroit Lions, 224 runs. Rushing yards last night, 151 of them belonged to David Montgomery. He'd carried the ball just 12 times, went for 151 and a pair of tutties, including a 72-yarder in the contest. Jahmyr Gibbs had 22 carries, 67 yards, but he also scored twice, was getting the majority of the short yardage situations. And through the air, Amon-Ra St. Brown, 7 grabs, 77 yards, and a touchdown, responsible for the most yardage of the 202 thrown by Jared Goff. But it was the Detroit Lions defense last night that was impeccable. They sacked Lamar Jackson, not Matt Stafford, not Danny Dimes, not a pocket passer quarterback, Lamar, 7 times for 55 lost yards on the ground. Lamar was 21 of 27, 288 and 3 touchdowns. Like, I can't imagine that when Lamar Jackson got to the locker room last night, he didn't have steam coming out of his ears like an old Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Because that dude was out there doing everything in his friggin' power to win this football game, and his offensive line was just letting him get, I would say, assaulted. Maybe criminally. By Aiden Hutchinson, who just lived in the Baltimore backfield.
I think it's more battery.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. Whatever one of those two works, that's what happened to him last night. Derrick Henry, 12 carries, just 50 yards, did have a touchdown, but he also had his third fumble. He has now fumbled and turned the ball over in every game so far this season. Here was a number that somebody threw at me earlier this morning, and it kind of blew my mind a little bit. 243 previous carries, Derrick Henry fumbled 3 times. He's fumbled 3 times in the last 43 carries.
Do you remember
carries.
When he used to be feared?
I still think he is.
I don't know. Those guys took care of him pretty easily. I think Saquon's taken his place.
Oh, as the best in the game? I don't disagree. Let me rephrase
that. The back that you don't want to play.
Let me rephrase that. When I say Derrick Henry is feared, I don't think there's a defender in the league that looks forward to having to tackle Derrick Henry when he has a full head of steam. You know what I loved last night about the Detroit Lions defense? They didn't let him have that. They didn't let him have that. Like, the fear of Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry is quite literally the juggernaut. That's it. That's a dated meme for you youngsters out there.
I got it. Well, it's a movie reference, but still.
For you, well, the movie reference was because of the meme.
I know it's the
best.
Okay.
Derrick Henry is the juggernaut, but he's much like the juggernaut, whose mutant power is the ability to control inertia, by the way, if you want to dive into the nuts and bolts of the nerdom here. Much like the juggernaut, he has to build the inertia first. Detroit was like, nope, if that cat touches the football, collapse to him. Just collapse wherever he goes. Maybe he makes a cutback. Maybe he makes a jump cut. Maybe he finds a hole. But he will have to shift his momentum once or twice. He is not going to get a straight line run head of steam at us. On the flip side, Aiden Hutchinson's a dog. That fumble that he forced on Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter that, I'm not going to say won the game because Detroit did still have to go score to make it a 2-score game, but effectively won the game for the Detroit Lions. It was spectacular. Now, here's the interesting part. We're going to talk about this a little later in the show. By the end of next Sunday, either the Baltimore Ravens or Kansas City Chiefs will be 1-3. One of those two teams will be 1-3 next Sunday night. However, and this is why football's fun, whichever one of those two teams is 1-3 will have lost to 3 of the best teams in the NFL. If it is Kansas City, they will have lost to the LA Chargers. They will have lost to the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, and they would have lost to one of the top 3 shortest odds getters for the Super Bowl out of the AFC, the Baltimore Ravens. If Baltimore loses, they would have lost to the Buffalo Bills, the shortest odds getter in the AFC, the Detroit Lions, the second shortest odds getter in the NFC behind only the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Kansas City Chiefs, who are, and this is true, I looked it up, the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's like, one of these teams next Monday, we are going to ask the question, Lonzo, is this the best 1-3 team in NFL history? And it will be a valid question, I think.
That's a scary. Doesn't it seem like some of these schedules are front-loaded in the NFL?
A couple of them. Y'all's is for sure. For sure. You get Philly, Baltimore, and L.A. all right out of the gate. Woof. All right, a couple of other bits of news. Very quickly from around the rest of the NFL. The 49ers have officially lost Nick Bosa for the year, tore his ACL in that win this weekend. He is done for the season. Najee Harris is out for the year. We saw the injury that he sustained in that game this weekend against Denver, an Achilles tear for Najee Harris. So he is out. The Atlanta Falcons have fired wide receiver coach Ike Hilliard after their offense completely flopped against the Panthers this past weekend. And because Jerry can't stay away from a microphone, Jerry Jones, not only is he an excellent GM, ladies and gentlemen, also a fantastic doctor and orthopedic surgeon, Jerry Jones has now said that it is a possibility that CeeDee Lamb may find his way onto the injured reserve list, and it has been confirmed that James Conner will need surgery to his foot, not his ankle, in that from that injury he suffered against the 49ers. But he will miss the rest of the season. Let's get to item numero dos. Baseball, of course, coming to its conclusion. Yesterday, the Atlanta Braves, because the only way to make this season, which is now officially guaranteed to be a losing season, the Braves cannot get to 500 anymore. The only way to make it worse is for the Braves to turn into the expected Braves down the stretch. They won their ninth consecutive game last night, 11-5 over the Nationals. Chris Sale, 5 innings, gave up 3 hits, 5 runs, all earned, but he did strike out 6 as well. He got the win last night from the dish. The Atlanta Braves, excellent. 14 hits last night, a Ronald Acuna dong. You also got extra base hits from Michael Harris II and Drake Baldwin. Drake Baldwin might have gone ahead and won the Rookie of the Year award last night. Jurickson Profar, Marcelo Zuna, Ronald Acuna Jr., Allen Harris, Baldwin, and Nacho Alvarez all had RBIs in this game. Harris and Acuna's and Allen's all came with 2 outs. The team was 7 of 16 with runners in scoring position. That's the Braves we wanted earlier in the year. That's what we've been looking for the whole bleeping time, Atlanta. Thanks for showing up when it doesn't matter because you got eliminated this weekend. Whatever. We'll talk more about that later on. But unfortunately, some bad news. Not that it matters. Should be ready for next year. Atlanta second baseman Ozzie Albies left the game last night with a fractured, I think, Hammett bone in his left hand. I think it's Hammett. I'm not sure. I should have looked it up. Anyway, Albies showed discomfort in his wrist after fouling off a pitch in the third inning while batting against Connor Pilkington. That's a hell of a name. Connor with a K, by the way. Connor Pilkington III. Stayed in the game for one more pitch, then walked towards the dugout, was attended to by the training staff. Turns out that he has a broken Hammett bone. I did the research for what it is, but not what it's named, how it's said.
You sure it's not Hammett?
Nope, I'm not sure.
Because there's an E on
there
the
is.
End of it.
So yeah. I don't know if that makes it Hammett? I don't know. What I do know is it is a little bone that is right in the, you know, got like a group of bones in your wrist right here. It is a little bone right in the middle of the group of bones that make up your wrist. And I learned this last night because I'm a Wikipedia fiend. That bone is known as being the bone that absorbs most of the contact when you swing and hit something. So if you're like swinging an axe and you feel a little pain inside, that's the bone that he broke last night. It can be broken, but it is broken through sheer force of contact and repetition. So this is like a baseball injury that can happen. Do not have any updates as far as what he's going to be, where he's going to come back. Brian Snicker, sorry, the manager, I forgot what his name was.
Because of its shape, it's called the hook of Hammett.
Yes, I did read that as well. It is apparently a bone that kind of holds the other wrist bones all around it in place, but it is also the one that, because of that, all the contact goes through those bones and channels into that one, so it is a very susceptible bone to be broken.
By the way, for those of you at home, this will help you explain where it is. It's right below the triquetrum bone.
Yeah,
everybody knows where that is.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, doctor. Yeah. He will undergo surgery, although the Braves said Albies is undergoing further testing. Snicker said that usually what they do when they break that bone is to remove it entirely. But we'll find out what goes on with that. And finally, item number 3. There was more baseball. I'm going to get to it later because we are about to start adding some baseball into the show on the weekly as we are inside the last 2 weeks of the season and heading into the playoff. But item number three is college football. We got two scheduling announcements yesterday. One from the... Hey, mate. How you doing? Let's throw another shrimp on the Bobby. What's up? What's up, buddy? Hey, mate. How you doing, pal? So dumb. This show's so dumb. I'm so dumb. All right. Two bits of scheduling news out of the ACC and the SEC yesterday. We gave you most of the SECs yesterday. They announced their rivalry matchups moving forward. The SEC, of course, is going to a 9-game conference slate starting next season. You will play six opponents. You will play the other opponents, six rotating in and out every year. And you will play three annual rivalries. South Carolina's annual rivals will be the University of Georgia, the University of Florida, and the University of Kentucky. Now, the SEC did have a way to balance out. They did two things. Number one, they wanted to protect historic rivalries. The other thing they wanted to attempt to do is to have these rivalries be kind of balanced, right? So what they did is they took the last four, I believe it was four, years of records in conference for each team. They gave you the average record, and then they tried to stack them up. So if one of your historic rivalries has been, like Georgia, one of the best teams in the country for a number of years, then your other team would be somewhere in the middle, like Florida, and your other team would be somewhere in the bottom, like Kentucky. But they did want to protect traditional rivalries. So, like, obviously, Alabama was going to get paired up with Auburn. That's a team that's been kind of in the middle. They also partnered up with Tennessee, who has been closer to the top for the last 3 or 4 years running. So their final team is a team that's been down towards the bottom, Mississippi State. South Carolina gets Georgia, who has obviously been the dominant force in the SEC for a couple of years. So to partner with that, you get Florida, who has been, again, kind of a team in the middle of the last couple of years. And your third team is Kentucky, towards the bottom of the SEC. Over in the ACC, the ACC's athletic directors agreed yesterday to officially move to a 9-game conference schedule starting next year. They become the fourth of the Power Four league to go in on a 9-conference game schedule. As part of the new scheduling model, league teams will now be required to play 10 Power Four games, meaning you have your 9 conference games. You must add one more Power Four or Notre Dame to your schedule starting in 2026. Obviously, multiple ACC teams already have theirs locked in. Some have multiple. For instance, Florida State is at Alabama next year. They also have Florida waiting at the end of the year. Clemson is at LSU next year. They have South Carolina waiting at the end of the year. Duke has Illinois at the end of the year. Georgia Tech's at Colorado. North Carolina TCU is a Dublin Ireland game next year. But remember earlier this week, when we were talking about this, and I said, I have a proposal, because you can't play a 9-game conference slate with an odd number of teams. Somebody's going to have to be added or somebody's going to have to be removed. Turned out the ACC said, yes, you can. Annually, one team will only play 8 conference games and will have to add another Power Four team to their schedule. Now, whether that team becomes... like they put that in your conference standings. They weren't really super clear about that yesterday, but we will find out about that, I'm sure. It is not formal yet. The athletic directors have signed off on it, meaning it will be formal, but it will still have to go through the ACC's top-tier committee to get the approval. It will. We'll talk more about this coming up later on in the show, what it means for Clemson and the rest of the teams in the ACC. But when we come back here in just a minute, we got to get a little bit more NFL in here. We got that coming up for you. Nick Saban has some comments on Dabo Swinney. We're going to play those and respond to those. And perhaps the most unhinged, random discussion I've ever heard that had me absolutely locked in. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
So in case you missed it, it was item number 3 on the water cooler cheat sheet. The SEC has announced their 3 annual rivalries for each team in the Southeastern Conference. We mentioned South Carolina's will be Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky. The ACC has now agreed to move to a 9-conference game regular season. That one is official. That will start next year. Now, there are some interesting aspects to this. They also approved a mandate that every ACC team must play 10 Power 4 games per year. Obviously, for most schools, and I'll tell you why I use the phrase most schools here in a minute. For most schools, you will play 9 conference games, meaning you add one more power game. For teams like Georgia Tech and Clemson and Florida State that already have an annual rivalry with a Power 4 team like Georgia, like South Carolina, and like Florida, they are already set. What I will say is this. I have enjoyed immensely the handful of years where we have started or somewhere in the middle of the season, we have had a Clemson-LSU game, a Florida State-Alabama game, a Georgia Tech-Colorado game, etc. And some of those games may still take place. But considering you now have 9 conference slates, conference game on the slate, my question is, how many of those Florida State-Alabama games will we get moving forward that are not already contractually in place? We have already seen some games get canceled because of the expansion to a 9-game slate across the Power 4 conferences. We saw it was West Virginia and Alabama. They were slated to play a home-and-home in 2026 and 2027. They went ahead and canceled that. Alabama, because they now have 9 SEC games, their schedule has already gotten tougher. They also already had, obviously, the 1-1 with Florida State, which started this year in Tallahassee and will be played again next year in Tuscaloosa. So that would have been 9 plus Florida State plus West Virginia. It would have given Alabama, effectively, 1 cupcake slot on their 12-game schedule. And until we expand to 16, which I also believe will be next year, but until it happens, you can't operate as if it will. It makes sense to me that you would say, we want the ability to throw a tune-up game in there somewhere. Whether it's ahead of the Auburn rivalry game or, you know, it's ahead of the Georgia game or whatever, we want the ability to have a tune-up game. And if we're going to play Florida State in the opener in Tuscaloosa, and we've got West Virginia in September, home and away as well, that gives us effectively 1 game to do that. So that I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of that, which is somewhat disappointing. And I think that will be true in the ACC as well. Because whether or not the ACC's upward trajectory, which I do think you are seeing one, whether it will be consistent, whether this conference will be better next year than this year, and better the year after that than next year, is obviously we can't prognosticate that. You hope that it does, or at least I hope that it does. I think college football is better when we have more good teams. That is one of the many reasons I have been pro portal and pro NIL as well. But I think you're going to see a lot fewer of these major out-of-conference games that aren't your traditional rivalries. Florida State, Florida's not going anywhere. Clemson, South Carolina, not going anywhere. Georgia, Georgia Tech's not going anywhere. But Alabama, Florida State, are you signing up for that if you're Florida State? If you've got 9 ACC games and Florida, and you have effectively two spots on the schedule to fill. Don't you want to make sure that you have room for a East Texas A&M in there? A game that you can just go out there and sharpen the knife a little bit before you get into the big game? Don't you want, if you are Clemson, the opportunity to have a Furman or a Wofford or a Coastal thrown in there before you play South Carolina at the end of the year? A game that you know, no matter how good you are and how bad they are or vice versa, is always going to be a fist fight. Of course you do. This is, while I understand why they're, let's be real clear. I say, well, I understand, as if it's common. I think it is at this point, and it is certainly if you've been a listener to this show for any length of time. Let's be really clear about this. There are two reasons that these conferences are going to 9 conference games. The lesser of the two reasons is that the conferences are so gosh darn big now that the only way to ensure that you have spread out your Team A against Team B is to add another game every year. This is to ensure that you don't have, as you've had in years gone by, a situation where two SEC teams, and it's even more accurate with more members in the ACC, a situation where Team A doesn't play Team B for 6 years. There have been plenty of times where kids have been recruited into a school, have played 4 or 5 years at that school, and did not play one particular member of the same conference. This eliminates that. In these conferences now, every school will play every other school at the least every other year, once home and once away. Meaning that if you play all 4 or 5 years of your football at an SEC institution, you will play every other SEC institution once at your place and once at theirs. I think that's fantastic. The primary reason, however, that this move is being made is very simple. It's just like every other decision made in college football. It's money. You're creating inventory here. If you are ESPN and you own the rights to Southeastern Conference football, you want as much Southeastern Conference football as you can get. Because if Alabama was to schedule a game against, well, hell, let's use Georgia Tech for an example. Georgia Tech has a home and home with the Colorado Buffaloes. Once in Boulder, once in Atlanta. When that game is in Atlanta, yes, the rights to that game are owned, a game that, because of A, Deion, and B, the upward trajectory of Georgia Tech, especially considering the boys on game day, like 3 of them picked Georgia Tech to be in the ACC title game this year, which, by the way, who told you to take a ticket out on that? That's right, your boy Rob Brown did. You're welcome. I know, Paul. That game is a lot more intriguing now than it was when they signed that contract. If you're ESPN, ABC, Disney, you want to broadcast that game. But if Georgia Tech is playing over in Boulder, Colorado, as they did to open the year this year, it's Fox that has the rights to that game. Now, it's bigger next year, but what does that mean? If you're Fox and you have the rights to the Big Ten or the Big 12 or whatever, that game next year is a hell of a lot more, especially if Georgia Tech does go to the ACC title game. What if Georgia Tech wins the ACC? Now you got Deion on one side and you're reigning defending of the ACC and a playoff team on the other. Now that game's super hype and you don't have the broadcast rights to that. This allows you to keep as many games as possible in your hopper, in your bracket, in your basket, if you're ESPN, if you're Fox. This allows you to have as many of those games as you can that stays within your broadcasting rights. And while you look and you go, well, Alabama, Florida State is interesting, sure it is. But it is less interesting if you are ESPN and you own the rights to SEC football. Now, that's not a bad example because they also own the ACC. But, like, pick your cross-conference matchup with two different partners that matters here. It is that type of game is less interesting to you if it is on another broadcast outlet that you won't get the ratings for than just having that team play another crappy team in your conference, but at least you get the broadcast rights and the commercial money from that. This decision got made as much for the ACC and the SEC, specifically for money. Now, the last caveat for the ACC thing. We brought up last week, can't play nine games with an odd number of teams in the conference. So do you invite Notre Dame to be an honorary member? Do you kick out Wake Forest? What are you going to do? The answer is, nope, you do neither of those things. Annually, one ACC team will only play eight conference games, but will still be required to play 10 Power 4 teams, meaning that you will get years out in advance. This is the year you're the odd man out. You're going to play eight, so you'll need to book two Power 4 teams. What that looks like, does that mean that your additional Power 4 game is counted in your conference record? Or are you only going to count eight games, and it's just a matter of how many of those eight do you win? I don't know how that's going to shape up. We'll see more. It does still have to be formally approved. We will follow that story for you as it develops. I am Rob Brown. He's the Great Lonzo. When we come back, a lot of criticism about Dabo. He did a radio show last night. He had a couple of quotes, some that were a little contentious. I'm not surprised. We'll talk about that next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, a couple of bits of information very quickly about this ACC scheduling that have dropped by Ross Dellinger, Andrea Adelson, and others. Dellinger said in a tweet after the approval of the nine-game slate, quote, "This has been the expectation since the SEC voted to move to nine games last month, as we reported then. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips led the move to nine conference games, despite some schools, namely Clemson and Florida State, pushing back against it." Listen, I'm unsurprised by that. I'm unsurprised that the folks who didn't want this to happen, similar to the SEC and Big Ten, I am sure, were the crown jewel teams. Why? Because those teams can sign those big-time, big-profit home and aways with other schools. Like, those are teams that probably get asked quite a few times, do you want to play a home and away with us? That's a money-making opportunity for those schools. By switching to nine, and Dabo had some comments during his appearance last night that we'll address here in just a moment, he pointed out that he did not like the move to 10 Power 4 games, to nine conference games, because it makes him feel like he needs to have not 10, but 11 Power 4 games. We'll get to that coming up here in just a little while. We also found out from Andrea Adelson that the ACC is moving to nine conference games, but it will not start next season. It will start in 2027 with 16 teams playing a 9+1 model and one playing an 8+2. Then Mike Barber, who is the editor-in-chief at Seville right now and also writes for the AP, he added on that, quote, "I'm told the ACC office does not want Notre Dame games to count in conference standings, nor does it like ACC teams playing each other in non-conference games. It believes those scenarios muddy the conference standings," quote, end quote, via his tweet. He went on to say, that was what he said yesterday after the news broke. So just a couple of add-ons there. The nine conference game slate for the ACC will not start next year. It will start in 2027. There was pushback from Clemson, Florida State, and at least one other school, though they were not named. My bet would be Miami. But I also feel like if it was Miami, that probably would have got thrown into the mix there as well. But we will find out more, I'm sure, and that the conference does not want Notre Dame games, and obviously this impacts Clemson more than anybody else, does not want Notre Dame games to count towards the conference standings at the end of the year, which makes sense because of the whole they're not in the conference thing. It's a strategic partnership, but with them not being in the conference and being, whether you agree with this sentiment or not, an annual powerhouse, that would make sense. The ACC doesn't want to count those games. So we'll see how that plays out. All right. Dabo did his radio show last night. Now, I don't have the audio from it, but what I do have is John Blau of the Post and Courier, who on his Twitter account was quoting Dabo in real time and giving his reaction to some of the stuff. And obviously with Clemson on the bye this week, we'll have John back on Monday and we will ask him about some of the statements given by Dabo Swinney yesterday. Here is some of what Dabo said yesterday. Asked about the loss to Syracuse, Dabo responded by saying, "We just can't seem to play complementary football, can't put it all together right now." But he did go on to say that Clemson has, quote, "a great group of young men. I'm really proud of these guys, how they hung in there." Asked about Clemson's 1-3 start and his reaction, he said, quote, "It caught us by surprise, but I don't think it caught God by surprise." He says his players will grow from this, quote, "I don't know God's big picture plan, but he'll use this for good. I don't have any doubt about that." This is where there's going to be a bit of contention, because I do not fault, judge anybody for having their faith be an overwhelming part of their life that impacts and has a lens placed over any aspect of their life. What I do not appreciate is when people use it as a shield against performance for a job that they are getting paid $11 million to do specifically. I don't lie. Because what you're effectively doing here is creating a spot where if I question you any further, I look like a butthole, right? Like, you're creating this paradigm where if I come in here and say the job's not being done well enough, the job's not being performed up to par, you're not living up to your end of an $11 million contract that you are getting paid to live up to, and then you drop that quote, like, it makes me look like the bad guy. And I'm not. And anyone questioning this team and where they are after a 1-3 start, that is more than fair. So I don't know if that's what he intended to do here, and I doubt that it is. But it feels uncomfortable in that spot. Now, if you want to say that you believe that this is a test to be put in front of these young men to make them better soldiers in the future, whatever, like, okay, that's fine. But to use it at, when somebody says, "What's your response to a 1-3 start?" and to immediately hit with the "it caught," I don't think it caught God by surprise. Like, man, okay, if you believe that it is part of some infinite plan, cool. I respect that. But at the same time, you're not doing your job well enough. Like, you're just not. It doesn't change anything. My comments and complaints are going to be the exact same as they were yesterday morning, as they were Saturday night. Like, I don't know. This felt like a weird spot for you to bring up religion. We're talking about football. And I understand that, again, for a man like Dabo, and I respect this about him, that is the umbrella that covers every inch and every moment of his life. I have no issues with that. But when people are saying, hey, we are expecting X out of you, and you're getting paid a lot of money to provide that, and it's not that you lost the game. Like, fine, football's going to happen. It's the fact that the criticisms of this team, and you heard it in some of the questions that got asked last night, not from callers, because they don't do that anymore, but from some of the submitted questions and all that, one of the things that people are questioning right now is the heart of this team, the mentality of this team.
I do understand where you're coming from your standpoint, but he's not doing it in a place where he could have gotten immediate reaction. because he's not taking phone calls. If this was, if he was doing this in a press conference, then he's making religion his shield and he's hiding behind it. But in this case, he's just doing his radio show with no phone calls. I don't know if they take texts or comments from other places, but he's doing it in a place where it's not immediately something that
get reaction. That is almost, respectfully, that's almost worse to me. Right? Like that's almost worse to me because you know, and I'll keep it a buck with you. I don't often listen to coaches' radio shows because they are a propaganda extravaganza, and especially now with most of it's not just Dabo, for the record. Most of these coaches' shows do not take direct interaction with fans. And I get it. Because as somebody who's been in this game for a long time, and as somebody who has hosted, not on that level, but has hosted even at like high school. I used to host a high school football team's coaches show. It was a huge high school in Pensacola, and I used to host their coaches show. And we would go to like a Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever. And you'd be shocked. There'd be like 300-400 people that would show up to hear the coach of this high school talk. And I very much remember we did the first couple of years that I did this, we did a kind of an open mic session, right? Like we were live, but we did kind of open mic where we had a microphone out in the crowd and we had one of our producers would run out there and a fan would raise and we'd put the mic in front of him and let him ask a question. And obviously we broadcast it on a delay because you never know, but like...
And it's also the law.
And it's also the law. But we would have that mic. And if they said something out of pocket, like the producer would rip the mic away and we'd just move on. But after that school put together two back-to-back very disappointing years for the talent level they had, the school came to me and was like, hey, we're not gonna do that anymore. Like, we're not going to take live fan interaction because the fans were beating up on the coach. And again, understandably so, that coach was getting paid for a high school level pretty good money and had good talent, and they were just losing games because it didn't feel like the team was checked in. And I kind of think it's the same spot here. So to go to that line of thought, and again, I get that it is the self-admittedly most important thing about Dabo and to Dabo is his faith. I understand that. I have zero problem or judgment of that at all. And if that is the place that you want to find your comfort and your respite in what is a tough moment, absolutely. I get it. I understand it. But at the same time, this is work. This is your job. And you're getting paid a lot of money to do it. And again, 1-3 wouldn't even be the end of the world if it was 1-3, but like you clearly got beat by good football teams who just outplayed you. But when it looks like, and the question from Clemson fans, and I think as somebody who has interactions with them daily on this show, and I would even say daily in my regular personal life with friends out in public, or even when some of you guys that are listeners come up and say hi, feel free to do that anytime you see me. The problem is what's being questioned right now is discipline and heart. What is being questioned right now is things that are within your scope of control. And so to say that we're coming up short in aspects of the game that are within your control, that just aren't good enough, to grab a microphone and say, oh, well, you know, it's all part of a bigger plan, can't control it. Well, then why are we paying you $11 million a year, right? Like, if you are making the argument that the results are out of your control, that the results are up to the higher being, fine, but why are we paying you $11 million a year? If the outcomes are dictated by a higher power, why are you making that much money? Like that, right? Like, I don't think that's unfair. I don't think that's kicking anybody. I don't think that that's rattling a branch here. I think it's a fair take. Like, that's not what I'm looking for. If you want to say, hey, I'm taking faith, I'm leaning on my faith for respite and for cool and calm, and I'm using that to course correct and fix where we are, fine. But at the same time, you have an element of responsibility to answer for the results of the job that you're getting paid a metric buttload of money to do. And this almost feels like a deflection to some degree. Like it, and not just a deflection, but it is a deflection that creates a world where my questioning it is going to inherently make me come across as a bad person to a lot of you. And I promise you it's not intended to. I have never brought this up about Dabo Swinney or anybody else. And I wouldn't, because it's not necessary. But when you utilize it as the shield from criticism for failing at your job, and again, not failing because he's losing, but failing because the team looks undisciplined, undeveloped, and without heart, then I have to criticize it. And I almost have to ask the question, are you doing this because you genuinely feel that way, in which case I would have a question, or are you doing this to deflect from criticism so that some people in my job, and I know that there are some people in my position would go, yeah, I'm not touching that. I'm not touching that. And now we're not going to ask the tough questions because now it looks like you're attacking Dabo's faith. I'm not. I'm attacking his job performance. I'm attacking the performance of the football team. The performance of the football team is not up to par. Best is not the standard right now. I am not attacking Dabo's beliefs or his faith or anything like that at all. What I'm saying is to use your belief in your faith as a shield to deflect from criticism of you not doing a job that a lot of people invest a lot of money for you to get paid a lot of money to do, that's unfair. And it makes it seem, if nothing else, it makes it seem like you don't have answers. That's what this feels like to me, like you don't have an answer. And if you don't have an answer, then maybe you aren't the right guy in the right job anymore. That's not a call for his job, just to be clear. But if you don't have answers after this many weeks of football, after 4 weeks of ball, of looking the same 4 weeks in a row, if you don't have answers, then I would say no matter what you've done, you're not the right guy for the job. But this feels like an effort to not be asked questions because, oh, you're attacking his faith. No, I'm not. I'm attacking the football team and the performance of the head coach, and that is my job and very fair. We'll get to some more of the quotes coming up later on in the show. We got your audio blitz coming up. All of that after a man who would win every national championship and never displays a lack of heart while doing it. Lonzo with a sports flash.
Wow. Thanks. I'm overwhelmed. The Detroit Lions improved to 2-1 with a 38-30 win over the Ravens on Monday night. Baltimore had the ball down a field goal with minutes to play, but Derrick Henry's third fumble in three games allowed Detroit to pad the lead. David Montgomery's starred for the Lions, rushing for 151 yards and a pair of touchdowns, and Jahmyr Gibbs added two more on the ground. The Atlanta Braves were eliminated from playoffs last weekend, but have been white hot down the stretch, winning nine consecutive games with last night's 11-5 win over the Nationals. Atlanta had 14 hits, including a Ronald Acuna Jr. home run. The ACC fined Syracuse $25,000 and issued a public reprimand for faking injuries during the 34-21 win over Clemson last weekend. The conference said in the fourth quarter, two players faked an injury with encouragement from a coach to gain an advantage. That is bad.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.